Session number 9963.
Mr. Brewer, Reel 1. Where were you born, Mr. Brewer?
In Rumney.
Which year was this?
1913.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a miner.
And what was your education?
Well, I went to the normal council school.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
To do what?
Work in the mines.
How did you become interested in politics?
Oh, well, that was a matter which was always discussed on the hearth among miners with my grandfather and my uncles, and of course, it was such a close-knit community, and most of the majority, overwhelming majority of the people were miners who were very interested in trade unionism and in politics. Quite early on, now the year that I left school was 19, maybe 26 or 27, the general strike took place. And I was then in the senior class in the school, and we almost came out on strike in support of our fathers. So we our allegiances were pretty firm and pretty strong, both the community and and its institutions.
Do you have any specific memories of the general strike, apart from the school children nearly striking?
Oh yes, we there was always a great pressure to go and have me dinners in the school. They put up a canteen in a nearby vestry of a chapel, and among others, I was induced to go along, in my case by my grandparents, with whom my brother, next brother to me, were living. And I don't know what it was they put on that day, but it was burned. It was tasteless. And I was sick of it, sick after it, and I resolved that I would never go there again, that there was enough food at home for me, and wasn't particularly meagre at that. So we, of course, when I went into the pits then, we used to have fair amount of discussion about conditions and so on. And very strangely, there was a young mining engineer who used to come around. And if I was working on my own, he'd stop me and we'd go into a quiet corner and have half an hour's chat. Because he was very interested in the miners, being the son of a miner himself, and we used to discuss the current situation. So I was involved in it right, well, from the time when I could start to reason, I suppose.
Coming back to the general strike, was there any attempt at strike breaking in this area?
Not in the 26.
Do you remember anybody who was against the strike in the area?
No, not among the miners.
What was the mood of people during the strike? Do you recollect?
Oh yes, they were going to stick it out. And they set up local councils of action to serve as a sort of welfare body, make sure that people had some food and so on. And they that became the law. I mean, we didn't do anything illegal, but there was no need for any policemen about. We just went about our business, amused ourselves as much as we as well as we could, and the adults did the same. It was a wonderful summer, And we had, I think it was the first outbreak of what we call jazz bands, with the gazoots. And we'd have all sorts of games of football, rugby and cricket, carnivals. And apart from any privation there may have been around, it was very good for the miners to be out and getting all this sunshine, which they would otherwise have lost.
What was the mood when the strike failed?
Oh, well, it was one of complete disgust.
With whom?
With the people, the unions that had given in and so on. Because the miners, well, it was such a long struggle, and it was such a terrible struggle to begin with. And their backs were up. They were prepared to fight it out to the last. And of course they expected the all the other unions to stand firm. And it was, I think, I mean, South Wales was solidly in support. But it was the unions out in England that, and London in particular, who packed it in. And we rather held them in contempt for that. But of course the miners stayed out for about 6 months. And eventually they were forced back by circumstances.
Do you remember privation to the families during the strike, during the miners' strike?
To some there were. But then the provident families, you see, now my grandfather was a staunch trade unionist. He'd come up, he got here when he was 10 years of age. And I think the family had stayed down in Plymouth and Taunton, that area, since the time of the Norman Conquest. And my grandfather, for example, would never accept that he was an Englishman. He was Norman, and that was it. And he now was, of course, also a cooperator almost from the beginning of the cooperative movement here. Well, he had 13 children, of whom my father was the eldest boy. And consequently, they had some divvy in the cop, and they had a good name as payers, so that whenever a strike broke out, and when they did have the strikes, the several local tradesmen would always turn up at the door with a local book and tell my grandfather, "Now, Mr. Brewer, whatever you want, you have. And here's the book." And of course, they had the basic creed, which was so strong here, that you always paid your way. And if you contracted a debt, you honoured it. And there were people who didn't, of course. But now they had this, the cooperators had this solid backing, you see, that they let their dividend accumulate. They had a good name with the local tradesmen. And the local tradesmen were very supportive because their livelihood depended on it. And they knew that there were some people who would pay, however long it took, but they wouldn't be happy until they cleared the debt. And I remember my grandmother telling me that on one occasion, the local parish people. And this man was the one who dispensed the parish relief.
The guardians?
The guardians, the board of guardians. And he came along to my grandfather's house because he knew that he had so many children. And he said that, first of all, my grandfather wouldn't let him in. But he said, I've got a legal right to enter the house. And he showed him his warrant. And so he let him come in. And he said, now we don't require any parish relief. We want no charity. And he said, well, you've got so many children, I must assure myself that there is food in the house. And he said, I would like to see your pantry. To which, of course, my grandfather's rejoinder was, like hell you will. But then he gave my grandfather this paper, and there he could see that he was entitled to assure himself that the children were not suffering privation and so on. And, come on, then he said. So he took him to the pantry, and he said, now have a look. And there was the stock of food. Now he said, you see that? That's all paid for. And he said, I've still got enough money to buy some more. When that's gone, he said, my credit is good. And he slapped these three books with the tradesmen's names on. And he said, I've got unlimited credit there. So the provident people were able to ride out the strikes. The improvident found it difficult. So that they had parish relief. Well, our local board of guardians, a bit of Wesley guardians, were for guardians, a superb body of people. And they roused the ire of the government by the amount of money that they gave out. And they were going to, what's the legal phrase, distrain on them, to force them to give less in the way of parish relief, which was, of course, fire under their skin, and they probably did more. They sent a commissioner down to run the show. So there was a fantastic dignity about the leading miners in the town, because they worked hard, they paid their way, and they just weren't getting anything like the reward that they deserved.
What were the formative political influences on you, do you think?
Well, it was hearing my grandfather, talking with my grandfather, my paternal grandfather at home. And my maternal grandparents were very strict nonconformists, independents, the sort of left wing of the Protestant movement. And they were people of absolute integrity. But So I stayed with in my mother's home for 5 years until she fell ill with tuberculosis. And when I was 5, my father, we were in a four-roomed house, so my father took my brother and I down to live with his mother so as to leave room in the house, because I had a little sister and a baby brother. Well, my mother died 2 years later when I was 7. And that, of course, was that sort of made me a bit reluctant to accept anybody's opinion on the main things in life. And I began to be a great questioner of all the accepted codes. Well, now my paternal grandparents would it be the Church of England then? Or had it been disestablished and become the Church of Wales? I've forgotten. But from now this strict independent background, we were thrown into a more tolerant Church of England attitude. And my paternal grandfather had no great room for a formalized religion. He always judged people on what they did, not on what they said. But they took their religion sensibly. And then on top of that, I had an uncle. My father trained him, who became the Welsh amateur champion at his weight in 1913. And in 1914, he would have been the British champion, if they'd known a little bit more about Turkish baths and all the rest of it. But he turned out to be a few ounces too heavy. So we had these three codes. There was the code of the Marquess of Queensberry rules, the strict nonconformist, and the more tolerant church. So you couldn't be under all those influences without, and the experience of losing my mother, without starting to think a bit. And one of my uncles, my second uncle, went in for boxing, but he was too short for his weight, and he gave it up, and he started studying. And he eventually went to National Council of Labour College in London, the one that an Irene Bevan and various other people went to. And so you always, among our friends, we were always under political discussion, allied with religious discussion. And when I left school, I deliberately did not try for a grammar school because I was the eldest of four children, and my two brothers and sister went to the local grammar schools. The youngest one went to the famous Lewis County School in down the valley. My sister went to the Hengard Girls' School, and the brother next to me went to the grammar school, which was founded in Rumney in 1923. And I went then, of course. I'd go to two or three evening classes a week because I was very keen on learning. And eventually, when I was 16, I was going to WEA evening classes and the University of Cardiff extramural classes, because I had a passion for enlightenment, and at the same time I realised I had to work to help out with the family finances. So it ended up, I had 2 years in the mines. I had to come out because I was going to have a breakdown. I'd been working too hard and growing too quickly. And after a year's convalescence, mainly cycling and walking out in the open air, I got a job in the local bakery where I stayed for 3 years. And all the time, of course, I was going to as many as four of these evening classes in a week. So my education didn't stop at 14. It was only sort of beginning. And we, there again, the political influence was strong because I attended one course. I did one 3-year course in international relations by a man who really knew his stuff.
Who was that?
He was a Mr. Moore. He was a, I think he was a history teacher in one of the Cardiff schools, and he used to come up here once a week. And he was really sound, and he gave us a picture of, we were well aware of everything that was going on internationally insofar as one could get the information. And of course, the other great thing was the local miners' libraries in Rumney and Tredegar.
Can you remember any specific books which influenced you at this time, politically?
Well, I would say that Charles Darwin, and not Charles Dickens, Thomas Hardy were the main ones. Then I read Jack London, And in by and large, I should think that by the time I was 16, I had read most of Dickens, everything of Hardy's that I could get hold of, and they had a tremendous influence on me because I could see the parallels with the Bible that I'd been brought up on earlier and the things that they were concerned about. And then, of course, there were all the books that one would get hold of in these libraries. The Tredegar Library was a magnificent one on international politics and so on. So that when I was 19, the South Wales secretary of the WEA used to come up to our classes once or twice a year. And he was very impressed with these arguments and discussions that are going on. And then we had a visit from one of Her Majesty's inspectors. And I know we got into a fierce discussion that night on Wyndham Lewis, T.S. Eliot and the literati of the day. And the class went on for 3 hours longer than specified. And that was a literature class given by a graduate teacher of English over in Merthyr. So the following week, this woman came along and she gave me this wrapped up parcel. She said, "That's for you." But she said, "Don't open it now, wait till you go home." So when I got home, I still got a copy of the book here, I think. It was one of T.S. Eliot's collected poems. And she said, and on it she'd written, "With thanks for," and she'd put this date of this class when this inspector had come along. And the next thing I knew, the WEA secretary came up to see me and he said, "How would you like to go to Coleg Harlech," which was an adult education college founded in up at Harlech, which is still there. The only trouble was that you were supposed to be over 21, I think, to go there, and I was 19. So they waived that, and I was offered a place up there, which I took. Now, in the meantime, of course, I was an active member of the Labour Party, local Labour Party.
When had you joined that?
Well, when I was 15 and a half, I was the financial secretary for the local, the Labour Party, the ward party that I lived in. Because we had a chap there who was a distant relation of mine. I didn't know it at the time. But he was he'd been victimised after the 26th strike. And it was always a delight to go along there because we'd spend hours on a wet evening talking about politics and so on. And he was very encouraging to young people, unlike the sort of characters I've met in the Labour Party since, who know it all and they want young people to listen to them. They never listen to the young people or encourage them.
Which ward Labour Party did you belong to?
Oh, it was the Upper Rumney Ward Labour Party. And that was that was a very strong ward because up there you had the concentration of the Welsh in the chapels. You see that if you go around there, you see that all the chapels, the ones that are still standing, have got Welsh names, and they were Welsh chapels. And you had the two factors. First of all, the hatred of the English and what they'd done to the language and so on. And the strong trade union element. So there were all these cohesive forces operating. Well, then when I'd finished my year at Harlech, I came back home. I was unemployed then for a year. So I went back to the evening classes now, and this WEA secretary again happened to come along one evening and saw me and asked me about my stay in Harlech and so on. And he said, well, what are you going to do now? So I said, well, I've the choice, either stay here and be unemployed or go away and find work. And I said, I'm very reluctant to leave. So he said, well, why don't you put in now, he said, for a Cassel scholarship.
What scholarship?
A Cassel. And this was a bequest made by Sir Ernest Cassel for promising youngsters of the working class who wouldn't otherwise be able to get further education. And there were 6 scholarships given annually, and those scholarships entitle you to go to any university in Britain for a year. At least the financial provision was there, £176. Now, if I'd had any sense of self-interest, I would have gone down to Cardiff University, because I could have travelled back and forth every day, and I could have made that £176 cover 2 years. And my main interest was in literature and history, but I was also very keen on the labour movement and the trade union movement. And I elected to go to Ruskin College in Oxford. And then I came through my first year successfully and took everything that Oxford could give me, or what I could assimilate. And then they said that there were 6 trade union scholarships going, and advised us to write a sort of minor thesis and put it in for assessment. And we were duly invited up. 7 of us were invited up to meet the TUC Education Committee. And the chairman was Arthur Pugh, the first of the trade union barons. He was a big man with the Iron and Steel Trades Confederation. Walter Citrine was there with his and his secretary, noting down every word that was said. So I answered all the questions very succinctly, didn't elaborate on anything, and so Arthur Pugh said, right, now, well, you've undertaken to do all these things, go for a diploma in economics and political science. And